it, make it, do it. Makes us harder, better, faster, stronger.
Campbell on second down and 5.5. Looks right, comes back to the left, going long for Gordon. He's out there and he caught the ball at the 20, at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
Unbelievable catch, unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap, Dalton back, looking near side, throws it, picked off, and an open run. It's Joe Hayden, and he's in, touchdown!
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagora.
It is a Football Friday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. And yes, I am back in the studio.
Welcome back, Notorious. It has been way too long.
It really is. I missed this place, forgot what it looked like. And then Megan Rock, who's in here assisting us, told me that now there's no more fun, that I'm back. Now all the shenanigans stop.
We cleaned up the kegger. There are no remnants. There's no evidence against us.
Dad leaves for 3 days, and all hell breaks loose. Anyway, we've got some good stuff for you today. We are going to, of course, tee up more about Sunday's game between the Browns and the Bears. We're going to have Nate Ulrich join us, who is covering the Browns for the Akron Beacon Journal. He's a frequent guest on the show. He'll be with us in the second hour. We'll get into some analysis with, of course, Gerard Cherry also in that second hour. It's Friday forecast, kind of a fun day. And today I really can see us, and we'll do this now as well, talk about what's going on around the league. We got to talk about that game last night. That game last
sure.
night really, I think, was kind of defining in multiple ways about what this 2013 NFL season has been all about. I want to get into that a little bit, but it's also Call Your Shot Friday. So this is a big day where we want to hear from you. 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. And then you tweet us at Browns_daily. So last night we're watching that game, and number one, the Broncos don't lose in Denver. Okay. What was the streak? 16, I believe it was, something
yeah.
like that. In a row, and they didn't just lose, Nathan. San Diego came in there and controlled that game from pretty much the start. I mean, it was close, it was competitive, but you knew the Chargers had a really good shot. I mean, I was feeling I was picking Denver to win, and I fully thought that Denver would come back at some point. But as the game materialized, it was the Chargers just controlling that ball game the whole way through.
They completely controlled the clock. They took the Denver Broncos out of their game plan. The Broncos in the second quarter went three plays minus 1 yard, three plays minus 4 yards, three plays for 4 yards, and four for 14. All ended in punts. They had in that quarter a grand total of 13 yards of offense. They struggled. I'm sorry. They had in the second quarter, they had a grand total of negative 1 yard of offense. Then they had one drive in the third quarter early on where they had four plays for 14 yards. It was dominated by the San Diego yeah. Chargers. And we talk about time of possession. We talk about how important that is, getting off the field on third down. Well, the Chargers possessed the ball for 38 minutes and 49 seconds to 21 minutes for Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. They converted six of their 12 third downs, one of which they didn't convert. They got a first down off of a Denver penalty on
right.
that. That was a big play when they pinned him down
huge,
to the one,
yep.
and then they jump in the neutral zone.
Yep.
And
I thought that was almost a turning point.
It was a massive play. And you talk about a team that came out with a game plan to run the football and establish Ryan Matthews. And Ryan Matthews came off of a game the previous weekend against the New York Giants when he carried the ball 29 times, comes back on Thursday, 29 more carries for 127 yards and a touchdown. And when you look at the rushing yards in this game, 177 rush yards for San Diego, 18 for the Denver Broncos. And no Sean Moreno and Monty Ball had been running wild late.
Yeah, that was a shock. I mean, such a testament, obviously, to that Charger defense. But I think overall, that Charger performance from top to bottom, especially the way they ran the ball. Ryan Matthews, you mentioned, you know, and you just wonder what's going through the head of North Turner when he was head coach there, and this guy just couldn't stay healthy.
He couldn't stay healthy.
Right, and you wondered, and there were questions about his heart and his toughness and this and that. Maybe it's just a simple fact of some good breaks and better breaks. So right now,
we're avoiding breaks altogether of his clavicle. That's right.
Avoiding breaks.
Yes.
And I think that's the key is, you know, he was brittle, and that's what happens. But this guy stayed healthy. They knew, and I talked with Norv Turner a lot when he was coaching the Chargers, they knew what this guy was for them, what he could have meant to them had he stayed healthy. But here's a stat that really jumps out at me about this Charger team, speaking to the stat
man
himself.
I like it.
31-6 record in December and January since 2006. And a lot of that is with Norv Turner as head coach. So
yeah, they've always been that kind of a team.
Right? That kind of a team that gets hot and does its stuff now. But you thought it was like a Turner thing, but it's now also, you know, a McCoy thing. So, you know, it's nice to see that happen for them. Although, you know, and here's the other thing now. The Patriots, how big is their win over the Browns last week?
It's huge. Don't ask Bill Belichick about it, though. Bill Belichick, they asked him today, you know, how do you feel about the loss? And he goes, I don't care about any teams but ours.
Okay, Bill. Coach, you have a shot now
to take
home field advantage. I mean,
right.
to nail it down. It's in your hands. Just go out and win a ball game. And it won't be easy for them. They got to play Miami and down in Miami, so that will be a challenge. But I still like, you know, just what we said about this New England team. You can never just count them out or think that they're vulnerable. People have raised questions about them because of how difficult it was for them to win a game against the Browns, that they had to stage that rally late, on and on and on and on.
But they did.
But they did it. They did it. So that makes a statement. And the Broncos were in a playoff situation for them against San Diego, a divisional team playing at home, and they lose. They really showed some real mortality there.
I think the problem with them is now their defense is not being able to keep up, whether it be due to injuries, they're having a tough time stopping the run, and they're having a tough time keeping points off the scoreboard. You look at their last four games, they're 2-4 in the last four. 2-2, I'm sorry, in the last two. They've split their last four games, and look at it. New England, they lost 34-31. They beat Kansas City 35-28, so they gave up 28 points in that one. They beat Tennessee 51-28, still gave up 28 points in that one, and then lose 27-20. So they've given up at least 27 points in four straight games. And granted, their offense is good enough to allow you to win some of those games, but if their offense kind of has a hiccup, a hitch in the giddy up, as it had in this game with only 20 points, certainly a season low for them, they've got some issues. They have got some issues. And I thought the loss of Wes Welker wasn't that big. In fact, it was Andre Caldwell who stepped in and was their best player.
Yep.
Demaryius Thomas had his worst game in his last seven, 40 yards. Decker, 40 yards. Julius Thomas, 40 yards. And the lack of a running game, that was, to me, probably the most shocking part of this whole thing, because you were talking about a situation where you had Marino and Ball rushing for about 150 yards combined a game over the four games prior to this one. So it was a massive change in their ability to produce on the ground, and they were held down. San Diego beat them. And granted, they're going to finish fine. Houston and Oakland, I would expect them to win both of those final two games for Denver.
Right.
But New England is now in the driver's seat with that head-to-head win in Week 12 where they overcame, let's not forget, a 24-point first-half deficit.
Yeah. No, I think this is going to – it's going to make it a more interesting finish, because at one point I was ready to, and I think you were, a lot of people were ready to just say, this is the Broncos. They just take it. We sort it. We felt – and rightfully so, that they would have that edge over Kansas City in their own division, and they proved that both home and away against the Chiefs. And it just seemed like they were rolling. And this has been a magical season for Peyton Manning, and he still, and of course, he adds to a touchdown total. I don't think he's in danger of falling out of MVP, winning that MVP, another one, because there's really no one else I'd give it to besides him at this point. He's won it. It's over in my mind. I know you make an argument for Russell Wilson. I've heard a few other people who come up. Tom Brady.
I was going to say, you have to make an argument for Tom Brady if they win the AFC.
Yes, Tom Brady's going to get votes. No, it could close it down, close the voting, but history tells me, because I've been part of this voting process before for the Associated Press on this panel. I'm not on it now because I work for the Browns, but in the past, I just know sometimes, and you get this buzz, and people just lock in on a guy, and I think he's been locked in on that he might not be able to lose it. But it would be interesting to see just how many votes, say, a Tom Brady gets, if, in fact, they go ahead and win that division.
And let me show one other thing here this San Diego Superchargers team. How about the fact that now, when you really look at their playoff standings and their opportunities in the playoffs, that they could very well end up on the outside looking in, despite the fact that they're 7-7, due to losing that game against Washington when they couldn't score on three plays from inside the one-yard line, kick a field goal, send it to overtime, and lose in overtime to the Redskins. That decision and their inability to score right there certainly could come back to haunt them.
No, it absolutely could. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. It's Vic Carucci. It's Nathan Zagura. He is Nate Dogg from here on out. I can't say, can we also establish another little, I don't say a rule, but like it seems awkward to refer to myself as Notorious VIC. It sounds much better when you do it.
I'll say.
Because I think you can't call yourself your own nickname.
No, right.
That just sounds cheesy.
You're Notorious VIC.
And you're the Nate Dogg, and I'll say that, and I'll say it in a cooler, hipper way. Megan Rock is helping me with that. She laughed yesterday when I first said it. She said it just sounded so funny coming from you. So clearly I don't have enough hipness, street cred to say that. And Megan's going to have to just kind of coach me up on that. So we got time. We'll get there.
Yes. We'll work on it,
she said. So let's talk about Sunday's game. Browns and Bears, I mean, we're going to talk a lot about it. But the quarterback switch, to me, just gets more interesting and curiouser by the day. The one that the Bears made for a change. The opponent's quarterback change is the bigger story. Jay Cutler coming into this game as the starter, missed the previous four with the ankle injury. And you sort of wonder what the thinking here is, because overwhelmingly, the opinion throughout the country, throughout Chicago, throughout anywhere you name it, is that they should have stuck with Josh McCown. The hot hand, he's playing great. The numbers say it. He's doing the job. Why screw with that? Why fix what isn't broken or break something that's fixed? And that tells me that Mark Trestman knows something beyond. This is beyond, I want, you know, the skeptical side says, well, this might have to do with the fact that this is a contract year for Jay Cutler. This is, you know, he's the starter. There's internal politics. There's Brandon Marshall to worry about because he's pushing for his guy, his boy that he encouraged, that got him to Chicago with him from Denver, on and on. But I think it's more strategic, and I tend to think it's because he believes when Jay Cutler is on, and Jay Cutler will do a couple of things. He will take chances that Josh McCown will not take. If you compare their game side by side, McCown, right, is the safer guy. He will take the more conservative. What's there, I'll take.
He doesn't have the arm.
And there it is. And Jay Cutler will stretch it and push it. And I think if you're Mark Trestman and you know how much you need these last games, chance taking actually might be the way to go because they've got to overcome a Detroit team that's beaten them twice. What do you think? What do you think of that theory?
I think when you look at the upside, if both guys play to their potential, Jay Cutler has more potential and more upside. And it's a very difficult finishing schedule at Cleveland, at Philadelphia, which is going to be a massive game for their playoff life, and then versus Green Bay. They need to win this game. So to make this switch, I think he's saying, we think we can beat Cleveland. We'll use this game to get your feet wet. Come back out here, throw the football around. Obviously, he must have looked very good in practice, I think. And now we're going to go ahead and get ready for the stretch. We're knowing pretty much that they're going to have to sweep to get into the playoffs. They're going to have to go 3-0 here down the stretch. And you talk about their numbers, and the numbers certainly favor McCown. McCown averaging 8.2 yards per attempt, Cutler 7.2. They both have 13 passing touchdowns, but McCown's only got one interception, 8 for Jay Cutler. Cutler's got the better arm. Cutler can make the bigger plays. McCown has been phenomenal, though, in his time, and I'm surprised they make the switch. But I think it is a thing where they say, this team's going to go as far as Jay Cutler will take us, and we need to get him in and get him ready for this playoff stretch if we are able to get there.
You know, I think the thing that would worry the Browns coaches, especially on the defensive side, is when you see Jay Cutler do his chance-taking risky thing and he pulls it off, it's almost unstoppable. It is unstoppable. I mean, he'll squeeze the ball in places that, oh man, you know, that's what that arm lets you do. He'll make that deep throw that he can make if the guy gets a step on the defender, and look, they get steps. Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey will get their steps. Martellus Bennett will too. They'll get some isolation. They'll get some coverage matchups that they're going to like, because that is just what happens, and that's happened frequently against this Browns team, unfortunately, and they're going to make plays there. So I think when you really break this thing down, you're right. It makes a lot of sense to use this as the return game, the transitional game from Cutler from being out for 4 weeks, knowing that stretch run postseason, it's all on him, and that you got to ride this guy, because this is the guy who gives you your best chance to go all the way and win it all. And for Mark Trestman as a coach, you know, I think it's also a bold thing. I think another coach in his first year could take a more, say, conservative thing, just because he's saying, look, I want my record to show. They fired the guy before me who had 10 wins. So he, from a playing the odds, playing percentage standpoint, the safest and probably most prudent way to go would be to stick with McCown. To get to where you want to go, to really get there, to put the bigger engine in the car and know it's being repaired, but hopefully it holds up, that's Cutler.
There are some people, though, I think that would say this is good. Jay Cutler, it's not like they were playing bad with Jay Cutler. It's not like this was a team that was struggling with Jay Cutler and McCown saved the day. Jay Cutler's played well. This team has been a winning football team with Jay Cutler, a quarterback, and he's the starter. And so I think he wanted to bring him back and reestablish him. Now, if he looks at this as somewhat of a quote-unquote layup, I think, you know, against the Cleveland Browns, I would want them to take that, take some umbrage with that and say, you're not going to come in here in our final home game and just go and do whatever it is you think you're going to do and run all over us. That's not going to happen.
All right, so we want to hear from you, because it's a Call Your Shot Friday. So your voice is a big one to be a part of the show. It always is, but particularly on a Call Your Shot Friday. So call your shot in this ballgame. How you feeling about this one? And Nate Dogg and yours truly will weigh in on that as well. 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. Tweet us at Browns_daily. Also, we're going to get some sound from the coordinators. Norv Turner, the offensive coordinator for the Browns. Ray Horton, the defensive coordinator, doing their thing with the press this week. And we've got some good cuts from that we want to share with you and comment on as well. It is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Call Your Shot Friday edition on ESPN 850 WKNR.